Hey everyone, this is Chris Keys for Premier Guitar, hanging out at the Cannery Ballroom in Nashville, Tennessee with my friend Casey. Casey, how you doing?
Good, how are you doing?
Very well. Casey's from the Deer Hunter, but more importantly, maybe not more importantly, he's also a luthier. Even keel, we'll say, even level. You're a luthier, but also the main man of the Deer Hunter.
Yes.
So
yeah, in a way a luthier. Like, I'm much more of a computer luthier. Like, I wish I could combine those words quickly enough. Compluthier. But like, I got really comfortable. I've been into 3D design and stuff like that since I was like 8 or 9. My dad worked for THQ and brought home this software, like 3D Studio Max when it was in DOS. And I just kind of nerded out on it. And it was at the same time I was developing my love for guitar. And so over time I would just like be drawing guitars
like
on
a
napkins.
Symbiotic
and things
thing.
Like that. Yeah. And then I had tried to go through a few incredible boutique companies, but it was just like to get a $4,000 backup seemed like a little bit decadent. So I was like, I guess I'll just learn how to do it
myself.
Yeah,
I was going to say, so was that the kind of the impetus of you starting to build your own guitars? Is like, well, I can do this myself, maybe.
It was the greed of just wanting like 100 guitars. And just like, if I could just make them for like $600 to $800, I can just make as many as I want. But it started there, and it started with like, I remember when Fender reissued their Starcaster.
Yeah.
I bought a few of them, and I just wanted to learn finishing mostly. So I took a few of them and I like stripped them down and put a 12 string neck and tried to make a 12 string Starcaster and things like that. But then I just started drawing my own. And this was actually the first design that I drew, and it's called the Solaris. But it kind of became like learning how to, I use Rhino 3D, design these guitars exactly how I would want them to be so that they could be CNC'd precisely, like everything from the neck shape, every bit of it.
What are some of the things that you have changed to either ease of production and creation on your end, but also as a guitar player, what you want that is different than the Starcaster? Because I was going to also ask another question, but why start with the Starcaster rather than
sometimes people...
It's
my favorite guitar.
We'll start with a Tele because it's so easy. It's a
right.
piece of...
Oh, right.
It's a table and a baseball bat.
I think that I would have had a better trajectory from like the desire to build guitars to where I am now if I had started with like just a solid body simple guitar.
Yeah.
But I've always really loved semi-hollow guitars, and specifically, like, there was this company who I was talking to maybe a decade ago, and I drew up a guitar. I was like, I'm thinking of an offset 335, but it's kind of Fender style. And I sent them this guitar that I designed. They were like, oh yeah, they made this in the 70s. It's called the Starcaster. And then I fell in love with it. But at that time they were, you know, $5,000 to $10,000. So I just always really loved it, and I always really wanted to have one. So whenever I would be thinking of getting custom guitars, it was always that. It was always that I wanted to have this kind of Fender inspired semi-hollow archtop kind of thing. So when I first set out to make them, like, this is the first one, but the one I made shortly after that I usually play is called the Orion, which is essentially just a Starcaster clone. But it's just that I love the articulation of a semi-hollow. And specifically with this, like, the chambering isn't flat. The chambering's like a little bit more carved on the inside.
What do you feel like gives that the guitar that maybe on a straight semi-hollow wouldn't have?
It's just a little bit more wood.
Okay.
It's just like it allows it to be articulate, but also have a little bit more sustain. So it's like it's a nice middle ground. But then it's just like simple stuff like, you know, a lot of the time you'll see this when companies use a C-shaped neck, it's just, we're going to take Fender's C-shaped neck. And for me, it was just slowly figuring out exactly what curves I wanted to use. And I think I danced around between like 7.5 and 10 inch radius for this. And I think I ended up at 9.5. So it's just slowly determining, like, even the distance from tailpiece to bridge. Little things that I just... if I tried to work them out with a company, it would be tens of thousands of dollars, you know? But if it's just me in a room moving things around and CNCing bodies, and I work with two guys actually who are also, they have their own company, it's called Jennings Guitars.
Okay.
But they handle the CNCing, and then I take it, so I do the design and then all of the finishing and wiring and stuff like that. But, and some of the finished fretwork and those kinds of things. But it was just like being able to spend as much time fucking around with things and then finally find, like, okay, this is exactly how I want it to be. That's really it. But it all stemmed from just, like, I want more guitars.
So why not build them yourself?
Right, exactly.
What's the coolest thing in the process? I will not allow you to say getting the guitar to the person at the end of the process and they love it. So you can't say that as your answer. But what's the coolest part of the process, or what's the most rewarding part of the process, or something that you find cathartic in, like building the instrument, whether it's shaping the neck, doing the finish? What do you find the most enjoyment out of it?
I don't know if enjoyment would be the word, but it's like it's almost therapeutic to realize, like, when I try to rush something like the wet sanding of the clear coat and I really fuck it up, that learning how to slow down, like, it really forces me to slow down and do things methodically and carefully and thoughtfully in a way that, like, when I first got into it, it was just like, okay, it's time to polish. Like, everything just has to be polished in 20 minutes. Now I'm like, okay, that's an actual process that takes some sort of grace and some sort of, like, elegance to it. So really, that's it. Like, I love painting. I really, really love painting the guitar. And as much as it's, you know, it
is
wouldn't
it
be done on this
one. Nitro?
It depends.
Okay,
it depends
whatever they want.
Yeah, but for me, it's like, some of my guitars, I use the wood tone finish. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I Instagram stalk you.
Oh, okay.
At least the brand Cave and Canary.
Yeah, I haven't done anything on there for a while.
Yeah,
but,
disappointed.
But this one actually is a funny guitar because it was like two tours ago. I was freaking out because I didn't have any time and I didn't have a guitar, because I have this bad habit of, like, making myself a guitar. I'm like, that's it. That's the only guitar I'll ever need. Then I get back from tour and someone's like, I want exactly what you just played. And it's like, it's too special. Just buy the one I had. And then I give them a discount because it's a little beat up and stuff like that. But
it's relic'd.
Yeah, but like, some people I think would upcharge it. Where it's like, well, it's my guitar. But for me, I'm like, I really sweat on this thing.
Yeah.
So I'll charge you like a lot less than I would. But I just had this bad habit. So I realized, like, a week before our tour, I was like, oh, I don't have a guitar. So I had all of these parts sitting around and it was like, yeah, like, I hadn't designed a guitar to be a natural finished black pickguard, any of this stuff. It was just parts that I had that were probably waiting for some other design I wanted to do, but I slapped them together and it's just been like my favorite guitar by far. So instead of going back to like the Starcaster clone or anything like that, it's just now for a few tours and I think indefinitely, like, this is the one that I love. But what I was going to say is, actually, I think one of my favorite parts is scraping binding.
Really?
Yeah, which is so tedious.
Is it like almost popping zits, like the gratification
of
that?
Yeah, exactly. It's really like peeling the longest scab that is not painful in any ways. It's just this slow, you're sitting there and you've got YouTube going or something like that and you're...
Hopefully a rig rundown maybe.
Exactly, exactly. But for some reason lately on the guitars that I've been painting, like, it's been the most rewarding process, because when you do it right and it's just this perfectly clean line, you don't dig into the wood at all, you don't chip anything, you wait and you do it at the right time, then you put your clear coat on, it's the right, like, rewarding process.
It's funny, you were talking about before how you didn't have a guitar, it's almost like you epitomize the cobbler's son having the worst shoes.
Right, yeah, exactly.
All right, let's dive into the specifics of this guitar.
Sure, I think it's pretty simple. It's, you know, it's just maple, rosewood, alder, and alder, like alder top, alder back. I actually just had these put in. They're Ox 4 PAF pickups. They're from someone, I want to say his name is Mark Stone in Oxford. I just went down to, I can't remember the name, it's just down the street, this guitar shop, something vintage.
Oh, Carter's Vintage.
Yeah.
Just down the street.
I went down there and I had a set of McNelly, they were like Imperials or Clarity humbuckers. And I really liked them, but I wanted something darker and I like changing that up from time to time. And they showed me these pickups and they were PAF. A little bit brighter, I think like El Nico 5s, and I had them wire them up, and this is like the first show I'll play with them.
Oh, wow.
I'm really excited. But pretty standard stuff, like Schaller tuning heads. I really love like the 70s style.
Yeah,
staggered.
Classy.
And I mean, everything else is kind of standard, like the vintage string trees. This is a pickguard that I got from Deco Boom, which is like the guy I go through now for my pickguards because I do a lot of engraving and stuff like that. But then Mastery Bridge and Tailpiece, and that's really it, DiMarzio strap. It's pretty bare bones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the wood recipe, is that something you normally would do, or is that, again, just because those are the woods that you had available when you're putting it together?
That was really it. It was like, okay, this is there. But it is kind of what I lean on. I like alder.
Okay.
I like alder a lot. I've tried ash, and maple's just a little too snappy and brittle and bright, so alder seems to do a good job of being balanced for me.
Excellent, man. Yeah. Well, We definitely talked enough guitar there, because this is essentially the only one you have that's on the road with you.
I have a backup that's a built. It's a built Zaftig.
I was going to ask you, because that I've seen you play with that, because that one has the Fuzz Factory and the
copy. What is that? I always forget if it's Revelator or Relevator.
I think it can go both ways.
But yeah, it starts with an R and it's got pedals in it. But that's the, it's not that one, it's the semi-hollow chambered thing, of course. Kind of like a big jazz master kind of thing.
All
but
right.
It's just a, like, it's got two, it's the same basic setup, but then it's got two Lawler wide ranges in it, and that's really the only thing.
I have a special spot for my heart, or in my heart for built, because they're from Iowa, that's where I'm from.
Des Moines.
So, yeah, represent.
Yeah, man, they're amazing.
They're good dudes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about another good dude, Dr. Z.
Yes.
What do you like about the Maz?
So, I don't want to talk shit about any company, but I was using a different amp for a while that from a company who was a really, really, really good company. I mean, it's Mesa Boogie. And
that's going to ask.
They're amazing. They were incredibly kind. The amp worked for me for a long time, but it was also like, it was the Transatlantic.
Yeah, the TA-30?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was the jack of all trades, master of none kind of amp.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized as like I was playing more and more and more, I don't need it to be 10 amps. I just really found myself wanting it to do one thing perfectly. And we were in Seattle. I forget what the store was called, but I was talking with Rob about the different amp sounds I wanted. He was like, you might want to try a Dr. Z. And he had one for a while. I forget what it was called. But I didn't really like the sound of it. And he was like, well, what the amp I had is really specific, so you should try some other things.
Yeah.
And I saw this, and there was a new one, and the guy had me plug into it and immediately blew tubes.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, you understand I won't be buying this today, right? And
he was like, well, you buy.
We've got a used one. And I plugged into this, and it was like in seconds. I was like, oh, that's the sound I've always wanted. I don't know if it's modeled after anything. I don't think it is. I think it's like, I think a good deal of the Z stuff is pretty much
their own. Original circuits.
But it's just like everything about it, the way it breaks up in like, it doesn't have so much headroom that you're just clean all the way to the top.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have so little that you dirty up so early on that like pedals and things play horribly with it. It's the perfect amount of saturation without being an overdrive. So I never really like pure clean. Like, I like my clean sounds to have a little bit of grit.
Yeah.
But I also like my dirty sounds to get really, really nasty sometimes.
Yeah.
So this just played better with pedals than I've ever experienced an amp doing. But on its own as well, just was the most pleasant guitar amp to play. Like, it feels perfect.
Casey, what tubes are in the sucker so people can know about kind of where they're at and tonally land?
Right. As a specialist, I can tell you those are EL84s.
Thank you. Well, man, this is the time where we say much ado to the amp, and you're about to hear it, but let's get into some pedals.
Sure.
All right. Favorite part of the video always is now. Casey, thank you so much for dialing up some tones for us.
Yes.
Can you give us like kind of a baseline what your I guess your core tone would be, you know, without too much any effects really running through it?
Yeah, my like clean, I think would just be. Like that, everything has like a little bit of compression.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. And I have a gate, especially today, it's kind of nasty power, but that's the basic clean sound. Yeah.
All right, so one of the songs I really like, and I hope that you guys play it and you can reference it, is The Old Haunt.
Okay, yeah.
Just because I love the spacey kind of reverb artifacts that's going on there.
Yes.
Show me what's going on there and kind of tell us what you got in the recipe.
Yeah, sure. So basically when I get to, it's like post second chorus, the bridge / outro part, I'm just running the cloud setting on the Big Sky.
Okay.
And I think I do a little bit of, yeah, I think that's really it. Like, my compression setting changes a little bit, but it's mostly. Oh, it doesn't. I guess that's pre.
We're finding stuff out on the fly.
Yeah, it's good. It's fine. But it's basically like
for me, at least live, most, like, I found I don't really use a lot of delay.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the three guitars, like, if I'm adding in the fourth and then the fifth and then the sixth and the seventh guitar.
Yeah.
Because the delays just cascading over each other. It gets so murky. And everybody sort of defines their tonal characteristics so well, and it's a little bit attempting more to be like a guitar section than just three guitars playing at the same time. So for me, I find that, like, the clarity of the Big Sky and their reverbs in general, like, they're so flat in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't well up in the wrong ways. You can do that with, you know, changing your parameters the right way to make them a little bit more bass heavy or top heavy. But I like keeping it flat and just, like, it's a little bit new. We haven't played that song yet with these pickups.
Oh, really?
So, like, I might change some things around.
Yeah.
But that's really it. So for that, it's mostly I just switch on. My compression changes a little bit, and I switch on the Big Sky, which is running the cloud setting. If I ever am doing anything, like, really shoegazy, it's the, oh, God. It's the Quiet Theory Prelude, which is my newest pedal, which I just realized that the logo I snapped off somehow. I'm losing knobs every day. But it's like, it's that, it's the Big Sky. It's a little bit of internal dirt. I think it's their clone.
Okay.
That's... not a lot you can play with it at once, but that's like, that's as sort of shoegazy as I would get, is all of that shit going on at the same time. Mostly for my reverbs, they just released a firmware upgrade or update for the Helix that has some really amazing reverbs. I realize as I'm just sweating profusely.
It's good,
but I still, yeah, I know. Well, I don't know why I'm still wearing it. But it's mostly I'm still relying on these two guys instead.
And just to give people, I guess, a heads up, is that you're running the amp and the effects are just coming from the Helix, so there's no, like,
right,
amp
no
simulations.
Modeling or anything like that.
Okay. And so, what else are you using on the Helix?
Why am I still wearing this? You can keep talking to me. I'll just make this weird.
Well, that's all right. We'll just take a cut.
No, don't cut it.
Well, all right, we'll have Casey taking off his jacket. He's gonna start shredding for us.
Am I?
Well, you kind of have to now. I just introduced it as such.
Oh, the jacket comes off. It's like the crossroads scene. Is that what's about to happen?
Yeah, you're Steve I.
Paganini?
Yeah.
So mostly, it's just amp.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of modeling unless we were talking about, because my amp blew a week or two ago,
mm-hmm.
building a patch that has modeling so we can just
for backup purposes,
yeah,
to make the show happen.
Right.
Gotcha. Well, like a song Wait, like, right. What kind of patches or song sounds are coming from that?
Basically all just, where am I, it's just dirt for me,
yeah.
The whole time. I play the dumbest guitar part in that song. Everyone else has these really cool, like, arpeggios, and I'm just... the point where sometimes I throw things in, because I'm like, especially on a tour like this, it's like, if they see me playing one string for an entire song, they're going to leave.
So you are leading up to Paul and Dusty, and they showed us in some riff rundowns we filmed with them, they got fleet fingers.
Right, very fast. Like,
yeah.
Like, two ballerinas next to each other.
what are you putting on there for the dirt? Like, what patch or what's getting used there?
So, I think on this one, all I'm using, it's their Minotaur.
All right.
Which I think is just their clone.
Clone of a clone, I'm sure.
Yeah. That's it for that. When I step more into the solo kind of stuff, I think I have two clones back to back.
Okay.
That's really it. Like, I just love the clone.
Where would that get kicked on? Where would someone?
There's Mustard Gas.
I was gonna ask about that song. That thing's heavy right out the gate.
Yeah. That's like where for most of the song I can just go between the biggest dirt. And then also again, I think a little bit because of the tour, at the end of the song, now, like, instead of us doing this singing outro for whatever, let's say 8 bars or 8 repetitions, we do 4, and then I kick that on and do like the most like ego stroking solo I can figure out in the moment.
Do you do like a knee power slide?
I don't think my knees could handle it.
At least you're honest.
Yeah, I think that would be like compound fractures all at once.
And you might ruin that beautiful guitar.
No, the guitar will be fine.
Oh, well, if anything, you know how to fix it.
Yes, exactly.
So what else is that box down there that you broke off the knob?
Okay, yeah.
Just because I'm not real familiar, so tell me how that you're using that in your signal chain.
So like, I watched this, let me see if I can just, let's go here, let's turn off that. So I watched, I forget what the YouTube channel is, but they do just a lot of, it's just pedals, and they're all like these really whimsical videos for mm-hmm. them. And I, for the next record that we're doing, I have been like pedal crazy, buying every sort of like synth pedal, modulation pedal, sequencing pedal I can find. But then interwoven in that is like, oh, another delay pedal, surely I need that. Another reverb pedal, why wouldn't I get that?
Yeah, add to cart.
And I found this one, the Quiet Theory Prelude, and it's really just a delay reverb. That I really fell in love with. And I really love their, I know this is like direction if you're going delay first or reverb first. Mm-hmm. I don't remember at all what these are. Just leave them where they are.
Yeah.
But I really just love this one specific tonality. Just a... Like, it's just a really malleable reverb that I find like I can do a lot with. Mm-hmm. But even though all I do is dime it out and turn the delay all the way up.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I can get away with the Line 6 reverbs for the subtle stuff.
Yeah.
But the really lush stuff requires, I think, a better reverb in mm-hmm. general.
And one last question referenced in the song will be Cursed Hands.
Yes.
Because I love that song because at one point there's a fuzzed out guitar and then there's also a banjo.
Yes, that's my dad. That's my dad.
Well, I love it. It's like the evil Abbott brothers.
Right.
The fuzzed guitar is just chunky as hell, but then you can hear the banjo's just going on the other channel.
The best part about that is I was just like, Dad, can you put some banjo on this? And he like obsessed over his banjo part. I think he like spent a few weeks, and there was even periods where he was like, I'm sorry, I haven't really figured out the right banjo. And then he shows it to me. I'm like, Dad, it's perfect.
Did he make the liner notes?
What do you mean?
In the record for the
oh
for
yeah
the, okay
yeah.
I'm just making sure Dad got his props.
For sure, Dad gets his props. My mom sings on the record.
That's awesome.
My girlfriend sings on the record. Like, yeah, they all get it. They all get in there.
It's a family family affair.
Absolutely.
But what's going on for that tonally for the fuzz part?
For the fuzz part, I just Rob has the cooler sound for that. I just go straight to. On this tour, I'll throw in pinch harmonics.
Yeah,
sure.
I kind of have
but
to.
But yeah, that's it. Probably got to change my gate a little bit. But just the dirtiest sound I can make.
Hell yeah.
That's really it, yeah. I haven't really dug into all the different things I can do, I don't think. Like, I always tell myself, I own a lot of fuzzes, because I thought I would use a lot of fuzzes.
Fuzz
and I never end up using fuzz. For some reason, I have one that I adore, which is the original Tone Reaper from Earthquaker.
Okay, yeah.
But other than that, I just keep buying fuzzes and being like, they're on the board for a day. I'm like, nah, I'm not gonna use that. But Rob, when you dig into his pedals, like he has the badass sound for that song. Yeah. I just turn all of my distortion on.
One question, not related to any song, I have to quiz you about tone stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, so you referenced it before, you have two other guitar players in the band. Where do you see your kind of role in the band? Obviously, you're the band leader, you're the guy with the vision of everything, but You're not just the rhythm guitar player. Okay, yeah.
I really do feel like the rhythm guitar player.
And that's how you're kind of locked in.
That's the way I think of myself. Okay. Because, I mean, we all trade off. Like, everybody has their moment where they're doing things that are more intricate than the other person. Or that they're two people are kind of acting as, like, not dueling, but, you know, complementary or collaborative guitar parts. I, because of how much I sing, end up doing a lot more chord-based stuff. But everyone just takes their turn, really. I think that's it. It just depends on the part. I know there's some times, like, we're in the studio and I'll have a part that I've written, and then when it comes time to play it and sing it, it's like, this is something I'm not capable of doing.
Yeah.
So we'll just, like, swap around. Nobody has a head about themselves in that
that's
way.
Great.
No one's like, I've had members in this band before who were like, I am the lead guitar player, so don't ask me to play chords and stuff like that. But for this, it's just like, what are you doing? Oh, you're doing something intricate? Okay, I got chords locked down. But I think of myself as the rhythm guitar player.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Perfect. Casey, thank you so much for talking here.
Thank you
very
much.
Talk to the rest of the band.
Awesome.
All right, still on the left side of the stage with Rob. Rob, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Man, real good. Thank you for talking guitars and stuff with us.
There's nothing else I'd rather do.
Well, let's dive right into it. First of all, does Casey make it mandatory for you to have one of his guitars?
No, though it is coincidental that this has replaced one that I built myself.
Oh, wow.
It's better than that one, to be fair, but... Yeah, it's not necessarily mandatory.
Okay. With that being said, tell me about the particulars of this instrument.
So, I mean, if we're talking like woods, it's, you know, alder body, rosewood fretboard, maple neck, kind of your standard, I guess, Fender thing to some extent.
Yeah.
The kind of shape and idea for this guitar is based off of one I built myself, like I said. That was kind of, there's this really nerdy guitar forum that I go on all the time called Offset Guitars.
Yeah.
And occasionally people would do something that was called like Jagstang done right, thinking that the one from the 90s was super ugly and let's do it better.
Yeah.
And so this shape is more or less one that me and one of the builders on there had come up with for my version of a Jagstang done right. So, you know, it's a little bit Mustang, but it's a little kind of skewed as well, you know what I mean? So
everything's kind of, I feel like, just a little bit like tilted.
Exactly.
Everything.
and that was kind of the idea too with angling the pickups. It just matched the kind of aesthetic and the lines of the offset waist and all that kind of thing. To keep with the Jaguar Mustang thing, it's also a short scale guitar.
Yeah.
I don't know how I ever got into that. I was a jazz master player for a long time. I bought a 72 Mustang at one point and I was like, this is a lot of fun. now here I am.
I love the armrest, the bevel there. That's so sleek.
Yeah, you know, this
gives
was
it like a race car feel.
This was a Casey kind of a design innovation, I guess, to some extent. That was just one of those aesthetic things that kind of set what he was doing apart a little bit. I think it originated actually on Nick's bass, but I agree. It's kind of sleek.
And just correct me if I'm wrong, but this is Meteor, right? The body?
No, this one is actually, I believe he calls it an Auriga.
Oh, okay.
A-U-R-I-G-A. This was before he had the decals made up for it, so
okay.
I got the blank headstock.
Well, maybe at some point it'll be worth more because of that.
Well, I'm going to keep it, so it doesn't matter. But
good answer. Good answer. I want to know about the pickups, though.
Yeah, so these, like I said, I used to be a jazz master player. Pretty much that was it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted something a little bit similar, but also a little bit differently. So these are McNelly pickups. I'm not sure exactly, apart from, you know, looking like gold foils, I'm not sure exactly what he based them off of. He's pretty flexible as far as I want it to sound like this, that, and the other. So the kind of, the thing I was after was the kind of sparkle and clarity you get from a Jazzmaster pickup with kind of the warm bottom end you get from a gold foil. I think he more or less nailed it, and they just look kind of cool.
Yeah, they look rad.
Kind of sweat corroded these days, but
it just adds to the goldness of it.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe
the corrosion. Where would you kind of typically ride the guitar in terms of pickup position?
You know, I have always been a neck pickup player for a long time, just mm-hmm. because I find the like weird honky mid range of the bridge to be really bizarre and strange to me.
Yeah.
But as of last year, I started playing on the bridge all the time, and to my ear, for whatever reason, it sits a little bit better with everyone. So I don't know if I'm more selfless of a player now or something, but I'm mostly on the bridge pickup. There are a few parts I switch to the neck just because that's what the part calls for.
Cool. And just to clarify, I'm imagining volume tone and then pickup selectors?
Volume tone. So these actually, this is my pickup selector switch, so we're talking bridge, you know, both neck. And then this was something I kind of really specifically wanted. From playing Jazz Masters all the time, I got really in the habit of having, basically I'd use the rhythm circuit as a mute switch.
Oh.
So I needed something to do that, because I would literally, I'd have to play my telly for some reason, and I'd go to flick a switch that didn't exist, or I'd go to use a tremolo arm that wasn't there. So this in the middle is a mute. It's basically like normal mute, and then up here is actually a low pass filter. Just there are certain sounds that I try to flip to just something a little more rounded, and almost think of like a trumpet mute or something, just kind of on the fly. So it's easier for me to do that and then just go boop, rather than roll back to some hopefully predetermined point on my tone knob and then all the way back up.
So then I imagine saying that you're probably opened up the whole time on the tone?
For the most part. Okay. There, it's kind of as needed. If a room seems really bright to me or something like that, I'll roll it back just for myself. But it's usually wide open, yeah.
And strings. Strings and string gauges.
Strings. These are Ernie Ball Beefy Slinkies. I've always played the Powers, which are 11 to 48, I think. And then just with the short scale, I go a little bit heavier to keep the tension feeling similar.
Yeah.
I like a little fight. So these, I think, are 11 to 54, something like that, 56, not sure.
Cool. And are you partial to any picks that you know, or you just kind of grab whatever you get your hands
not
on?
Not really. I always used to use the greens.
The Tortex.
Now I use the yellows.
Okay.
I think they're 0.73 or something like that. But yeah.
Cool, man. And over our shoulder here, you have a Vox AC-15?
Indeed. That's the hand-wired AC-15.
And two L84s in that, I imagine?
I've never even had to go in there. It might just be one, actually.
Okay, yeah, with the 15.
Yeah, and it's switchable down to 7.5 as well.
What do you dig about that that made you kind of stick with this one?
You know, I am just a Vox guy. I've played other amps in this band. I have other amps at home. It just feels like home for me. It's something I'm very used to. It's something, I really like simplicity. So being able to basically do everything with four knobs is almost too much, but a good enough for me, you know, so.
And onboard reverb, do you use that or is it dialed off?
That one doesn't have a reverb, actually. That one has nothing, since it's hand-wired, it's just kind of as clean as possible, even though I think they are still, like, made in China or Japan or something like that, but, sounds great.
Rad. I love the Tolex, too, rather than the black.
The Fawn's great, you can't go wrong. That's how Nick ended up with his cabinets like that, actually.
Ooh, matching sides.
Yeah.
Let's dive into the pedal board, man.
Sure. So this is my life here.
The pedal guy.
Yeah, something like that. I just, the Helix thing scares me. It seems like if something goes wrong, you're done forever. This, I kind of have a better idea of kicking things or wiggling things.
Yeah.
It's easier for me to figure out what's happening. And also, obviously, if a pedal breaks down or a cable snaps or something, it doesn't take everything out of commission, like if you have a big workstation.
Yep.
So this is actually less scary for me.
So where would you say like your core tone, or like where you're at most of the night with the amp and maybe some pedals engaged? Do you have like a tone that you're kind of leaning on most of the night, or?
It depends on the set, really.
You know,
I kind of try to set my amp for my, I guess, cleanest or platform tone, you know?
All right.
And then I kind of have just, to some extent, some of the dirt is for gain staging, and then some of it is more textural or I guess aggressive rather than necessarily what I would consider to be an amp-like tone.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, let's hear the amp by itself and let's dive in, kind of walk us through your pedals how you're using them for the set.
Get a pick out of here. So, noisy stage as we've already been over.
Yeah.
I'm kind of not quite clean. I think, you know, like for me, actually Casey and I were talking about this earlier, as good as modeling is now, I think that weird in between, that verge of breakup sound is kind of where a real amp kind of, that's where you know?
Yeah, it's where you feel it.
Exactly, so that's kind of where I live. I like the control of being able to roll back a little bit or to, you know, go from picking to and have it, you know, the different gain stage. So that's really cool for me. That's just my platform tone, I guess. If we're going through in order, if I could remember correctly, it's this guy, which is actually a fuzz, despite it looking like a treble booster.
Yeah.
This is made by Arc-Effects. He basically gave us this prototype fuzz, I don't even know how long ago at this point, but it automatically went to my board. I fell in love with it. I was like, this is my fuzz forever. And then we did a summer camp last year where I actually raffled it off. So he built me another one, but he didn't have the same enclosure, so he put it in a gamut enclosure.
And I like how you're clarifying, not a gamut.
Yeah, not a gamut.
Well, let's hear the Not a Gamut.
Yeah, man. So this for me is more what I would call, I guess, a normal fuzz sound.
All right.
Yeah, I use it in like in part of the old haunt. And so it has like,
and you got the classic like the 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock kind of setup with the knobs there.
Sort of, but so the gain is just maxed. There's no gain control on it. Mm. This is just the volume. This is kind of an EQ switch, and then this is actually kind of like a starve. I don't know pedal building speak. The thing in it that controls the starve is a little different than the last one, so I don't have quite as much range on it. But like rolling it back a little bit. It's more gated and kind of sputtery sounding. So this one I leave a little more open, as you just heard happen. So yeah, that's kind of my what I would refer to as classic fuzz. This is a small sound, big sound mini. It does a lot of things. I like to use it, coincidentally, for a kind of gated. So there's you know quite a bit of gain there if you want it.
Kind of dig in.
Yeah, it's great as an overdrive. It's great as even a distortion. I just happen to use it for maybe the least practical of all the things it does.
Yeah. Pitchfork. What do you got using that for?
So that actually is seeing no action on this run. When I build my board before a tour, basically we get a song pool together of things we might play, and I build my board based on that. The things I was going to be using it for didn't make the cut, so
it's there for beauty purposes.
It's there for laziness purposes, where I don't want
to
rewire everything.
And for me to ask you to tell me about it, and it's not even wired up because I'm a dumbass.
And no, it's wired up. I'm just not doing anything with it.
Extra port out on the side there.
Out of curiosity for all of us, it currently sounds like this. Sounds like an octave up.
Yeah, pog.
It does that.
Cool. What do you got the Big Sky for?
Everything. The Big Sky has like my three main reverb sounds, or I guess my three main exaggerated reverb sounds. This one is just kind of like a big room kind of thing. This one is just a little more spacious. It has a little bit longer of a tail. It's a little more washy to me as well. And then this is a sound that I affectionately refer to as the cloud. So
I suddenly feel the need to genuflect because I feel like I'm in church.
I really like that sound just because it removes the transient from things. It kind of ends up being just a wash or a pad beneath things, and it's just a different texture than say an organ might be. It's more kind of synth-like with that octave in there and stuff like that. So yeah, I just the Big Sky is insane for everything. I all the time consider buying a new reverb or a new delay pedal just because there are so many cool ones that come out all the time, but then it's like, oh wait, hold on though, I probably have that in there, you know?
Yeah, right, you gotta dig a little deeper.
Exactly.
Timeline, how are your obviously it's a delay, but how are you using it?
So when I first got the Timeline, I was coming over from just an analog delay, and I just felt like it was too much for me. And I was like, so I obviously, now I just have to try doing as much as possible with it to see if it's worth keeping.
Yeah.
And so I do. So now I have different settings for every song, and I could kind of bank through our set list of, you know, like these patches are for the same song, but they're totally different sounds. We're like, ugh. This is just like a slapback. And this is more of a quarter note kind of thing. But yeah, so now I just am able to bank through different things for different tunes. So I'm using it for as much as I can, basically.
It's definitely a utility knife of a delay box.
Absolutely. Absolutely is. There's everything you could ever need and all kinds of stuff you won't. So.
Speaking of that, we'll just keep on rolling with the Strymon train. Talk to me about the Flint.
The Flint I kind of treat like their marketing suggests to, where it's kind of, I pretend that that's the stuff that's on my amp. Uh-huh. That's my onboard, like my just spring. Uh-oh, sorry. Just a spring reverb. The tremolo I was using as a really jagged thing.
Which kind of harkens back to the sawtooth of the Vox. The Vox always has a sawtooth.
Exactly, the really hard cut kind of tube tremolo. But yeah, that's pretty much what that does. And then this is a similar cloudy sound that wells up a little bit more. And also has a hard cut, so that's a nice tool to have for various things. This is a newer one for me, at least on this tour.
Yeah, they just put that out not too long ago.
It's rad. It's super rad. This is kind of my lower gain stage between these two. This Himmelstrutz Fetto is my, like... my super, super mega dirt. Pedal is very, very versatile, very amp-like. I know those are really corny things that people say about pedals all the time.
Yeah, right.
And then the Westwood, is as much as they tell you all about it already, it is very, they refer to it as translucent. It's got a certain kind of chewiness to the texture that I like that actually reminds me of cranking a Vox up a bit. But like I said, I don't run it too dirty.
That's just more of it.
Exactly, it's like a more switch for sure. And then this guy, the Hawk, is just like my box of annihilation, where I don't know what any of the switches do. They're not labeled. I know that that's how I like them. Yeah, that's another small sound, big sound pedal. Brian makes some really cool and crazy stuff. But it's just a volume knob on it that I use for like most cursed of hands, like the... But it's just very, it's a noisy stage.
So. And that's the part where I was referencing earlier with Casey, where he was kind of, that part's in the song, and then alternately his dad apparently is the banjo part.
Yeah,
yeah.
The banjo
part. Because I asked him about that, and he's like, he'll have to ask Rob. So thank you for knowing to go there.
Yeah, that's just one of the, like that, I bought that pedal on a whim. It just seemed like a random one that Brian made. It was like a one-off that he didn't make that many of. And then I had it around when we were writing and recording Acts 4 and 5, and it's all over both of those records.
Yeah.
So it kind of lives on the board.
Especially
now.
The back end of that, the side B of Act 5, it's really there.
The darker, hear, yeah. The darker end, yeah. Yeah.
All right, sure. Last one, the Depths. How
are you
using
that? Yeah, I mean, I'm using it for kind of the most practical of vibe purposes. Nothing too weird. Sure, kind of classic Univibe sound, you know? Just to kind of make things sound like you're underwater or you're in the band that plays in the movie From Dusk Till Dawn.
Rob, thank you so much. We're going to talk to Max now. All right, last but not least, certainly not least, Max. Max, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Very well, man. Thank you so much for talking gear real quick with us. Tell me about this little spaceship.
Yeah, that's funny that you say spaceship, actually, because that's what Casey was going for when he made
it. Yeah, it looks Jetson-y.
Yeah, it was... I mean, it's a Cave and Canary, so it's one of Casey's guitars, and I had come over and he showed me this in his little 3D modeler program. Mm-hmm. Can't remember what he was using, but I was like, I like that one. I want that one, you know. And so, kind of, I don't know. For the most part, he had it done. I think we kind of just talked around some of the curves and the belly cut and stuff like that, of which there is none. But yeah.
What about pickups?
These pickups, it's the same in both of the Leonises. I have the McNelly P90, and it's just Soapbox P90, and then there's Stagger Swagger Humbucker.
What do you like having the Humbucker P90 combination?
Well, so in the main one, like I was saying, it's a pot blend for the pickups. I really liked the versatility of... Otherwise, I would prefer a guitar with just two humbuckers, mm-hmm. but I liked having... the ability to blend some sharpness from the bridge and some really round sounds from the P90. Mm-hmm. With this, in fact, obviously it's just a three-way. I typically just use the P90, but on a stage like tonight, which is incredibly noisy,
yeah, as we've heard,
I will just play the bridge, which is a little sharper than I'd like. But what I actually end up doing is there's the normal EQ, and then there's the little band EQ So if you see here, this orange light that's lit up, sorry, I'm moving around a bunch. Usually it's off. I have it on, and it rolls off all the high end, all the sharpness that this bridge humbucker gives for a night like tonight. But normally I like kind of a rounder neck sound.
And what strings do you use in this bad boy?
Same thing everyone uses. We all use, I don't even know the gauges. They're just purple power slinkies from Ernie Ball.
Excellent.
Yeah. I don't know, like, if I was recording, I don't know if that would be my go-to or what, but they're great for tour. They're cheap enough.
Just what you guys got in the stash.
Yeah, and, you know, they're cheap enough and reliable enough that you can sort of replace. And I actually sweat like a monster, so I kill strings within a show easily. Not even by the end of the show, they're just dull and dead. So it's nice to have a reliable set that can just be changed out, you know?
All right, Max, we kind of alluded to it already. What is the actual Mesa Boogie you got back there?
That is the Mark V V25. So it's not the full-scale Mark V head. It's just a 25-watt version of it. It does have selectable wattage. It's either a 10 or a 25 for the clean channel. Mm-hmm. But as is traditional Mesa Boogie, the clean channel also has three dirt. three like gain stages within it. And then their high gain channel, which also has another three in it. I primarily just use the clean channel, and I run it pretty clean too. I run it on the 25 watt, and I like having a very transparent amp, which is what I kind of fell in love with that about. Is obviously I'm not using it to its full potential, but its clean is perfect even for if I want to do some modeling in the Helix. And I even had a separate tour where I was kind of experimenting with the Helix, and I was running a four cable method because if you run it a certain way with the Helix and the send and return through the Mesa Boogie, you can actually bypass the preamp in there, which allows me to just use a preamp, like a virtual preamp within that. And so just by having the Boogie, I can have 20 amps, and it just uses the power amp of the Boogie. So it's totally transparent, totally clean sound. This tour, not so much. It's a shorter set and a very sort of streamlined set. So I just made a very streamlined, I turned the Helix into a bypass looper essentially. Whereas usually I have a different patch for every song and a different snapshot for every part of the song. Yeah. This was a very, I want dirt, big dirt, wet dirt. You know what I mean?
And so you're almost using it like almost a traditional pedal board in
sorts? Exactly, yeah. And I did have a traditional pedal board up until this, and I always kind of looked down on the digital realm, but I just had one tour where it was a nightmare of cables breaking, powers not working, blowing up a pedal, and I kind of lost it, and we ended up band funding this just so that I could have a reliable thing to use, and then I fell in love with it. And then
you converted Casey.
Yeah, I don't know if I converted Casey or just the technology converted
Casey.
Like, he saw the application of it and was like, wow, it just makes your life so much easier. Contrary to Rob's belief.
He saw you were getting a lot more sleep at night.
Yeah, exactly. Well, probably less sleep before a tour because I get so anal about the patches.
Yeah.
Like I said, except for this tour. I'm kind of lazy on this tour, but usually it's like a good 4 to 5 hours of building and really making sure every part of every song is unique, but not this time.
And not that we're going to dive into it, but I don't want to cut you any short for your musicianship, but you also help with keyboards too, right? Or since.
Yeah, I've been trying to get away from that world, actually.
Doesn't look like it very well.
I know. Well, I started out playing keys in the band before Gavin, and I wasn't playing guitar. And there was enough crossover when I switched to guitar of parts that I had that necessitated the use of a keyboard. But
thanks,
actually,
Barry.
Casey really wants to. Yeah, thank you. He really wants to make a guitar with some kind of MIDI piezo thing that I could run. Because essentially with the Helix, I'd be able to run MIDI patches and select. So rather than switching to a synth pad here and then playing and switching to an organ here, I could just have this run offstage through Reason is what I use for all my synths and stuff.
I think by doing that, you're like ushering back Viggo from Ghostbusters 2. That seems like it's too much going on.
No, it's
just for one instrument.
It's less going on, actually, to me. I think the less things I have, the more comfortable I feel. As opposed to, it's just different schools of thought, but Rob likes having more things because then if one thing goes wrong, he can hone in on what's wrong.
Yeah.
I like knowing that if something goes wrong, it's either that cable or that cable, and I've got nothing else to worry about. I don't know.
Dude, Max, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. It's Chris Keys.
Did your alarm just go off? Are we done?
Hey everybody, thanks for watching the latest Rig Rundown. Guess what? Every week we upload a brand new Rig Rundown to PremierGuitar.com a full week before it's available here on YouTube. So to get your gear fix as soon as humanly possible, go to PremierGuitar.com/Rig Rundown. And while you're there, be sure to sign up to get an email notification so you're the first to know as soon as each week's new Rig Rundown is available. Cheers, see you soon.